Welcome to NIS for Networking, the podcast for new networking nerds or those looking to refresh the basics. I'm Holly Metlitsky, a newer nerd on the scene, and with me is my co-host Ethan Banks, a veteran nerd who sometimes has to refresh the basics as it's buried deep in extensive networking knowledge. Find and connect with us on LinkedIn. On today's episode, Ethan and I will be discussing a topic that is pertinent to my everyday life as a sales engineer, which is, how do you balance performance and cost when selecting networking equipment for different clients? So I know it's a bit of a mouthful, so here's the question for today's episode again. How do you balance performance and cost when selecting networking equipment for different clients? So as a sales engineer, this is a question that I ask myself probably nearly every day. I think a good place to start is first to look at different types of customers that one might be dealing with. So these range from small to medium-sized businesses and then on to hyperscalers. This term, hyperscaler, gets used quite frequently. And when I first heard this term, it was quite foreign to me. So Ethan, could you help me explain this term a little bit?
Yeah, hyperscalers refer to the very largest networks in the world, largest networks and largest computing operating environments. This would include shops like Amazon Web Services, the largest of the public cloud providers. AWS is global, as is Microsoft Azure. They are also a massive global network. Google Cloud Compute, they're also huge. Oracle would fit into this. IBM would fit into this. There's not that many of these organizations. There's more than I named, but those are the ones that leap to my mind. And their networks, I mean, they buy a massive, massive amounts of equipment every year to support their data center builds and what they're doing. And so everyone would love to be a customer of a or have a hyperscaler be their customer, because they're going to spend ridiculous tons of money anyway with those guys. And when they're building things, performance, usually they have very specific computing problems to solve, and cost isn't the issue. It's, can the equipment, whatever it costs, do what I need? So they're unique to me, Holly. They're kind of an odd customer. If you get them as your client, great. But most of us that are selling equipment to different companies aren't going to be dealing with hyperscalers.
Yeah, and I think that leads us into a good point that every customer is unique in, you know, there's not a one-size-fits-all solution. So hyperscalers, cost might not be a concern, but when you're looking at maybe smaller to medium-sized businesses, maybe cost is their sole requirement, and perhaps they can be more flexible on performance. So, you know, sometimes you're also competing with different vendors. So you don't actually know what the budget or performance specs are. You're just kind of trying to put your best foot forward and hope that you can win. Sometimes you've got to think about these things in context more than just, oh, how do we compromise on X and Y? So what do you think the first step is to understanding the customer's performance and cost requirements?
The first step for me, and I'm coming at it from an engineering perspective, is understanding what the problem really is that they're trying to solve. With networking, by and large, if we're talking about just raw speeds and feeds of equipment, switches and routers and firewalls that need to move packets from point A to point B, most clients will hardly use 10% of what that box has to offer, what its capabilities are. That's the reality of it. What almost anything that you spec, certainly in routers and switches, that customer is just not going to be pushing that much traffic, where the raw performance of the box is really the issue. Cost will be a bigger driver. They're going to be constrained by budget. They're going to have a certain amount of money they can spend on the project, and they're going to have some amortization schedule where that cost is depreciated over some number of years, depending on their accounting practices. So the first thing to understand is, well, what are you really trying to get done? And to me, it's less about the speeds and feeds and more about they have a unique security requirement, or they've got this compliance regulation that they've got to meet, or they've got to be able to do a particular kind of segmentation because of some business requirement. And again, the performance matters on sub level, but it tends to be more about features and a little bit less about performance. If another box is slightly faster, that's not going to tip the scales one way or the other for most of the buying decisions.
Yeah, I think that leads me into a question that I was also thinking when this initial topic was posed is, we use this word performance quite loosely, but that could be interpreted differently by different customers. So, you know, is it bandwidth? Is it latency? Is it power? Is it speed? What is performance? And maybe, you know, as a network engineer yourself, what have you seen to be the most limiting performance factor?
Power can be a big one if you're using power over Ethernet and you're in an enterprise setting where they're trying to feed a bunch of wireless access points, let's say. And the power budget can be a concern, something you really got to think about and make sure you plan for that, especially if there's going to be expansion and growth. In the modern day where work from home is so common, I don't know that that's the issue that it was 5 years ago, but that can be a question mark. Backhaul speed can be a constraint. So depending on the nature of the users hanging off the end of a switch, where is their data? How much data are they moving around? What are they working with for data sets? So their port speed, they're plug in and they get a gig, or they get 2.5 gig or whatever it is, might be plenty. But if you've got a whole bunch of heavy hitting power users that are hanging off of that switch because they do CAD work, let's say, I don't know, and they're moving around lots of data all the time, that backhaul speed from the switch back into the core could be a constraint, just, you know, depending on a lot of things. And this goes back to, again, what are they trying to get done? What sort of data are they working with? What are their business requirements? Another limiting performance factor, I would say, because you said it earlier, we're using the word performance loosely, but does performance really also mean features? Because that could be another thing. It's like, well, this switch has this very specific performance feature that I'm looking for, and this other switch doesn't do it. Okay. I mean, would we file that under performance? I don't know. I think we can in this conversation anyway. And it just could be simply, it's a feature that the client is looking for that one product set offers and another one doesn't. And so that could be a limiting factor there. I guess raw performance can be a thing where, you know, speeds and feeds can be a concern, but I just don't see that often. We engineers love to get super excited about how fast is this thing? And, you know, every iteration of Wi-Fi, let's say, one of the performance, more speed, wider channels, we can shove more data down the pipe. And it's like, yeah, but in reality, you'd never design a channel that wide for an enterprise system. You wouldn't do that. So yes, it can be faster. But that's not actually your constraint. Your constraint is throughput. Your problem is actually not one person sending a ton of traffic through the wireless access point. It's 100 people with lots of little data streams that are pushing traffic through the access point, which is a different way of thinking. Now you're thinking about, well, how many access points do I need to put out there? Mm-hmm. Not, you need the latest Wi-Fi version because it's got wider channels and can haul more data through. Yeah, if you're going to use wider channels and it's a perfect RF environment, which you won't and it isn't. So there's a thinking that comes into these network design conversations where it's not about the numbers on the data sheet to me as much as the specific computing environment that you're dealing with and how the network is going to support that. In that way of thinking, you figure out what the limitations and the bottlenecks are likely to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think you first mentioned power, and we're definitely seeing that constraint when we're looking at building AI clusters and trying to, that is really where power constraints are coming in, seeing it, talking about it every day.
Well, I hadn't even thought about that, right? Because I was talking about power over Ethernet, just thinking about, you know, power budgets in smaller settings. But yeah, you're exactly right. AI clusters are, because of the demand for GPUs and then on some level, the networking gear that can support those computing environments, the number of kilowatts or megawatts you need to feed into the data center are considerable. We're seeing this happen with some of the hyperscalers buying their own power plants to support their data center builds. That's a thing that's happening now.
And again, it's all coming back to use case. So often a customer comes to you and says, hey, I want this box with these speeds and feeds and whatever. But you know, you really have to dig into, okay, but why do you want this? It's not just some fancy cool thing and it's the new box on the block, but it might not actually be the right thing for what they're trying to do. So sometimes it's not really about cost and performance, but it's about trying to identify the why behind their ask. Why do you actually want this? And I think especially as a sales engineer on the sales side, you really have to try and design the network not necessarily to what the customer is asking for, but to what they actually need. So how do you go about navigating the situation where maybe the customer has this idea in mind of what they think they need, but as the network engineer, you've kind of got to navigate around that and try and figure out, okay, and present a solution, which is what they actually need and not necessarily what they presented to you initially.
Well, to me, when I've been in front of customers, it's you want them on your side. You want to feel like you believe in them, that you're a part of their team, basically, that they can trust you, because if you're a good sales engineer, that's exactly true. And so you don't want to belittle them. You don't want to go, yeah, you don't actually know what you need. Why don't you let us grown-ups that work for the vendor or work for the partner tell you what you need? You can't be condescending. You can't be, it's like, oh, I know why you need that. That is cool. But I was listening to what you guys said. We've got a different product that's maybe, and figure out what the benefit of that product is. It's cheaper or it's less power consuming and so on. Yeah, we could sell you the bigger box. We'd be happy to. But honestly, you don't need it to do what you need to do. We got this other box, or we got this other solution that fits in, and it's going to be better for you overall. I'd love to sell you the big heavy box, but honestly, can I save you a few bucks and recommend this other solution instead? So when you phrase it like that, and then always, for me, it's like I always think I might be missing something that they're saying, or they didn't say it. What they're saying doesn't quite make sense to me. So maybe they didn't articulate an important detail that I need to understand. And so another thing I would frequently do is go, okay, so you said you need that, and you're describing the problem as this. And so I don't think you need that. Is there more to the story that you haven't told me that would help me understand why we should position this solution instead of this different solution? And again, not coming in heavy-handed, not coming in I know it all, but going, maybe I don't know something that's really important. And again, coming along them as a team member, as a partner, someone they can trust and work with, is always an approach I've taken that's worked well for me. Building trust is so key in these relationships. You want them to know you're not out there to gouge them. You're not out there to, nor are you there to demean them. You've got a network engineer in that room you might be selling to who's got an ego. And if you come in from the outside and then basically make them look dumb, they are no longer your friend because you made them look dumb. Yeah. And you probably shouldn't have. Occasionally you meet a dumb one, but that doesn't happen too often in my experience.
It's a tough balance because you're coming in to try and make suggestions for their network, but they live and breathe their network. Hopefully, you know, most of the time they know 100 times more about their network than what you know. And sometimes they think this is what they need and they're happy with that decision, but they're not, you know, you really have to build that trust to let them open up and say, actually, I need this because these things aren't working. And again, it's kind of, the network's their baby. They don't necessarily want, someone I work with always says, like, you don't want to call someone's baby ugly. and it's pretty much that. Like, you can't go in and be like, oh, well, you're doing this all the wrong way. It's not right. Like, they know where the problems are, and you've got to build that trust so they can open up, so you can really discuss what performance requirements or, you know, what their needs are with all the information you could possibly divulge out of them. So you've got to build that relationship.
You're nailing this. It's so much of this is human. It's not always about the numbers and the bits and the speeds and feeds. There's a big human element that goes into network design, working with the other people in your IT group, working with your business stakeholders, and then as a vendor coming in, as a partner coming in, working with those folks as well. The human aspect of it cannot be understated. It's such a massive part of this. Related to this, Holly, is a topic that's come up recently in some conversations I've had with some friends, neurodiversity. There's a lot of people that are sitting in that network engineering seat. They're ADHD. Maybe they're slightly autistic on the spectrum. And they think a bit differently and sometimes obsessively about things. And so you were saying, well, why do you really need this? It could be they've just latched onto it for some vaguely irrational reason because of their neurodiversity and need to actually get talked down from it. As long as you approach it reasonably, they'll be open to that. I don't know. I've never been diagnosed, but thought maybe I was somewhere on the spectrum. I don't know. But
I think as engineers go, I think we've all had that thought. For sure. You know, I think you've got to be a little bit different to be loving these kind of things.
Yeah, so. For sure. But anyone that approached me reasonably could get me out of my obsessive state about the thing and go, yeah, the better solution is this for these reasons. And as long as those were reasonable reasons and it was explained to me in a logical way that I could get my head around, yeah, I was good. I was all about it. Maybe it took me a little time to get there, but in the end, yeah, I got there.
Yeah. And I think that human aspect is so important. Going back to, you mentioned something about cost, and I think it's important to mention this because it's something I didn't know coming into the industry, or I never really thought about. But industry-wide and across all vendors, one thing that's important about cost is that list price does not equal purchase price. It's most of the time there are discounts involved, and I wouldn't say like not necessarily negotiable, but what you see as a list price is not necessarily what the customers are buying. So sometimes, for example, like if cost is a really limiting factor, but the customer knows exactly what they want and it's what they need, but it's not in their budget, because often network engineer is not finance. They know what they need. They know what performance they need to have the best network. But if they have the budget for the year and there's nothing they can do about it, it's really non-negotiable from a customer's perspective. So sometimes you've got to actually play around with discounts and do that internally. I'm quite grateful that I'm a sales engineer, so I don't deal with pricing because I don't want to have those conversations. But have you ever been on the end of that?
Oh, for sure. So what you say about list price in my experience is exactly true. List price is a number. It gives you a vague sense of what a vendor might think that that product is worth. But the actual price you pay will be wildly different. And vendors have all kinds of motivations to cut a deal with you. So I've worked for very large organizations where we had a committed buying relationship with a networking vendor, and that relationship was contractual and included a negotiated discount price that was massively off list, like over 60% off list. But that was because we were going to buy from them several million dollars worth of equipment during the course of the year. Other places I've worked where I've been on the other end of it, actually as a partner doing selling, price was negotiable because the partner had a little bit of leeway with the vendor and some points to work with. You know, so there was a little bit of flex there, maybe not a lot, but some. The vendor could also be working with the partner on some kind of a discounted deal that could be part of what's happening there. There could be sales incentives going on for a particular quarter where, okay, they'll do the deal if we can push this much equipment at this price. Okay, I got to get approval, but we're going to do it. And then the deal gets done. And it was a one-time thing, but basically because you asked and said, look, I can't do it for $150,000, but I can do it for $135,000. Can you get me $135,000? Basically, that would be another 10% off. I don't know. Let me ask. And they're running up the chain. Everyone in finance looks at their numbers and goes, yeah, we need that deal. We need $135,000 on the books. Let's make it happen. And so just putting your hand out and asking can sometimes make a deal happen. So cost, in my experience, Holly, has been very fluid, quarter to quarter, partner to partner, company to company I was working at. Smaller shops, sorry, you tend to not have as much negotiating power because you're not buying as much. The larger the company you are, the more power you wield to influence price on a given deal.
Yeah, and it's really important to understand that for the question that was posed to us, because if you don't really have insight into the industry or you've never been part of the sales cycle, which I hadn't before joining, any other industry, you know, cost is cost. You're selling something for a price and you're buying it for that price. So again, coming back to that question, how do you balance performance and cost? Often it's not really a balance necessarily, because neither of those features are static. Both of them are flexible. So it's really coming back to understanding the human aspect, the needs and requirements of the customer, knowing their network, and putting your best foot forward as a network engineer. And, you know, when you hit a hard limit, if it's speeds and feeds or if it's price, there's usually a way around it. And it's not as, you know, hard and fast as it seems. It's not as like, oh, we've got to decrease cost to get this performance or change the box completely. There's a lot of ways around it.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, as you say, when you go into it early in your career, you think, well, black and white, it costs X, and you do math and build a spreadsheet. No, it isn't like that at all. It's, again, the situation's so much more fluid, and you got to go into it being willing to be flexible and request some concessions from whoever you're buying from. If you're struggling to get what you need, and if you're doing the selling, you need to know that all kinds of things could happen that could make this deal go through, and you gotta be creative sometimes. And you might not have the power to be creative yourself. Like Holly, I'm guessing you don't have the power to just set whatever price you want. That's someone else's problem. But just But knowing there's might be an opportunity there, you know, gives you as the designer some flexibility. It's like, if you want the bigger box with the bigger speeds and feeds, if we could get it to you at a lower price, would that fit your budget? And then they say, yeah, that would work. I need to come in here and that meets my budget. Okay. You know, and then off you go. I do find it's rare on the buying side that budget has a lot of flex. It might have a little flex, but I find it's pretty rare that the company's going to be like, oh, you want to spend another, you know, 25% over budget? Yeah, probably not. Probably not going to happen. It tends to be more on the seller side where there's flexibility there.
Yeah, the only time that you're going to get a customer that has some sort of flexibility in their budget is if the things are gone very, very, very wrong and they're really, really, really unhappy, and somehow you've got this miracle solution that's going to turn the world upside down and fix all their problems, which realistically, it's probably never going to happen.
Back in the days when antivirus was a thing, we didn't have any at a company that I was working for. And then we got hit by a worm that was cranking through the network via the Microsoft Exchange server. And I had been told, because I had recommended, we really should have this. We should have antivirus as a company. This is important. Nope, don't have the budget. After that worm wound its way through several hundred computers and the Exchange servers and so on, they found budget. It got done. Yep. So yeah, exactly what you say. Sometimes emergencies can make money appear.
Yeah. Or just they being taken from somewhere else. but yeah, so circling back to the original question, how do you balance performance and cost when selecting networking equipment for different clients? So we've discussed a bunch, but I think what's really key again is to ask yourself a couple questions first before jumping into data sheets and cost and everything else. And firstly, you know, can you get the required performance within their budget? Very basic. You know, can you meet their needs at their cost? And if not, is there a requirement for performance that is actually necessary? Is what they're asking for maybe a little bit above their needs? Will they use all how much data are they pushing? And perhaps, you know, look into alternative solutions to what they're trying to achieve. If need be, can you play with some discounts if you're in that kind of a field? And perhaps you need to just start investigating different designs that may be able to meet their requirements at a lower cost, possibly, or different feature sets if they, you know, the box you're offering doesn't quite do what they need. So, you know, I believe that there's definitely a way forward, regardless of any, you know, hard nose or hard budgets, hard performance requirements. There's always something for every solution, but you really just have to investigate and design a network to get there. So yeah, Thanks for listening to NS4 Networking today. If you have any topics you want us to cover, send us a message at packetpushers.net/follow-up. We have an ever-growing topic list and we'll add your question to it. Check out all the other podcasts from Packet Pushers by searching for Packet Pushers anywhere you get your podcasts. We've got dozens of shows now covering networking, security, wireless, DevOps, and even leadership. It's all free for you. Subscribe to what appeals to you and let other people know. We'd really appreciate that. I've been Holly Metlitsky along with Ethan Banks. Find us on LinkedIn or Packet Pushers community Slack group. And just remember, networking isn't hard. Other people figured it out, so you can too.